back, WNST, Tassel Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're positively out in Catonsville today doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I would show it to you, but I ate it. It's all brought to you by Window Nation, our friends, 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free, 0% financing. I screwed up, Ron Cassie. I got my windows back in August, so I just did the buy two, get two free. Now I didn't get 0% financing for 60 months. It's still on. Take advantage of it, 866-90-NATION. And our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We got great families here. Got people in Ravens gear. They're going to get Maryland Lottery scratch-offs. I have a few Ravens scratch-offs and several of the holiday cash drops. And they're about to do their 50th anniversary drop of the old Wishbone scratch-offs. And I told Roz I need those and those gold ones and all the fun stuff. Crab Cake Tour is coming to Drug City on March 3rd. It is going to be an unbelievably special occasion for me. I'm celebrating my father's 104th birthday with a man celebrating his 82nd birthday, who was my middle school music teacher. And I've loved music my whole life. My grandfather played the bugle out at the racetrack, and it was in bands and stuff. So I've always loved music. Everybody that knows me knows this. But he was our choral director for My Fair Lady at Hollabird Junior High in 1981. And we're bringing in the Drug City, and we're going to tell his life story. Calvin Statham and the Statham Singers, legend. Somebody you would want to write about, Ron Cassie. Ron Cassie is here from Baltimore Magazine. We have talked about the, give me the name of it again. The
Trailblazers.
Trailblazers. Yeah. I want to get that right. Like Portland. Like Bill Walton with a beard and it, right?
Bill Walton was a trailblazer.
He was a trailblazer, absolutely. At Baltimore Magazine, usually Don holds the magazine up, says subscribe. I would say that in an effort to be fair, I was far too nice to Max in the first segment. I need to crush Max a little bit. I'm drinking Royal Farms coffee out of my mug. Not that I'm Justin Tucker. It's off season for him. I'm still working. Max has a thing about Western fries. She doesn't like Western fries. And is that an out of town thing? Do you like Western fries? Are you anti Western fry?
Ron, no, Jackson? I love Western fries.
You're a Jersey guy.
Listen, I don't eat them that much, because it's something you eat, I think, when you're younger or something. But I love them, and I will have them. I like Western fries. Yeah,
I know you've told this story before, but I'm going to ask you again. You come down here from Jersey. You've been writing for years and years and years. Honestly, nobody talked to you, and they just read your work. If they didn't know you and they read your journalism, you really would think you're a Baltimore person, right? Like, you probably know more about Baltimore than you do your own homeland.
That's absolutely true at this point.
Okay, then I hit that right. Good, yeah. I knocked that out of the park. Good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was born in North Jersey, and then
sorry,
like going to high school, middle school, high school in Allentown, Pennsylvania, and came down here early in my early 20s. So I've been here more than 35 years, but it's also nice that people from Baltimore will point out that I'm not from here, even though I'm like approaching 40 years of living here.
Marty's Bass is across the street at Bill's Music House, another great place that did really right by Gina Schock last time I was here. She was my other bucket lister, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
John Waters and Gina Schock. And Gina Schock now, like, we're friends. Like,
yeah,
we text and we're cool. And
yeah.
She's Dundalk. I mean, she's as Dundalk as Dundalk is Dundalk. Have you ever done anything on her?
I met Gina Schock's parents. I went to do a little story, and I can't remember what the occasion was. It was a Hollywood Walk of Fame, but the Go-Go's got. But I went over to interview her parents
at her
Dundalk.
House.
And her mother was struggling with some I think they'd gotten a new computer. And she was struggling a little bit to get everything set up. And I helped their parents set up the computer they had gotten.
Oh,
like, that was the
man.
Most. They were the most.
You made the shocks electric, is what you're saying.
Well, you know, that's just like.
You gave them digital shock.
It's just how things are, like in Baltimore. You're like,
if Gina was
just
here now, she'd laugh about that.
Yeah, like, it was just the most natural thing in the world. Like, I'm like, oh, I can maybe help you with this. And her parents were great. Her mom was great. And they were just really generous and down to earth. And so, like, just the most natural, like, kind of just going over to visit
Baltimore's cool,
a
right? This is
parents.
Like,
yeah.
This is what makes Baltimore awesome.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah.
And that's why I need to hang with John Waters like you do one time in my life, and then it's over. Then I can, it's like when the Rangers won the cup. You can die in peace. You know
yeah.
what I mean? The Eagles fans said that. Now look at them. Now they got to win another one. But so you come to Baltimore and you stay. Did you love it? Like, I often think to myself, if I settled in San Antonio
yeah.
for the rest of my life, I'd say, you know, I didn't like it the first time I was there. It rained. It wasn't good. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I've never lived anywhere else to say that.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, I was, you know, my very early 20s, you know, 21 or 22, the first time I came. And I really did love Baltimore right away. Allentown, you know, there's a lot of similarities with Baltimore.
All the factories.
Yeah, exactly.
Down.
So we had Bethlehem Steel was next door.
And in Bethlehem, they're killing time.
That's it. And Mack Trucks was leaving to go to South Carolina. And so the row houses, I mean, some of the blue-collar kind of culture was familiar, but there was so much more happening.
Right? I'm sorry, yeah, just... I'm picturing Allentown in 1980.
Listen, that was like the year I graduated high school. Yeah, when that
81?
Came out, 81 or 82, when that song came
Red
out.
Red Nylon
yeah.
Curtain, baby, pressure.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
So, yeah, so some of it felt really familiar—the row houses and everything, kind of blue collar culture. But you know, you had the city paper here. You had WHFS. It was obviously, you know, Allentown. Allentown now is like half people of color, like half Latino. But like then it was like almost all white, like when I got grown up. So you have this really diverse city in Baltimore. You have these great neighborhoods. You have the waterfront. And, you know, eventually over time, right, like where I live in Upper Fells Point, you know, Frederick Douglass lived there, Billie Holiday, Barb Mikulski, Nancy Pelosi. I mean, these are like, this is the culture of the people you grew up around. And it's still at the intersection of so much in American life.
I don't
life.
Think we realize how cool it is, right? Like when people fly in. Forget the warts and the bad parts. I'm just talking about if you come here and you don't get mugged and you don't get shot, you just come here for an experience. Whether that is Bruce Springsteen for CFG Bank Arena, the Eagles the next night. I'm going to give you, I know you wrote a story on that. We're going to talk some music and stuff, but it's about trying to bring it back to life. Like even just me talking about Mr. Statham and taking him down to the Hippodrome 2 weeks ago to see My Fair Lady. It was this magical experience. I felt like my parents were alive again. Bobby, you with the shocks, right? Like anything you can do when you get to be at our point in life where my back's still good enough to help him out a little bit, that Baltimore helps each other. You said that about Barbara Mikulski and everybody at your Trailblazer party.
Yeah, you know, Baltimore is a place I think if you want to contribute, like, you know, somebody will give you a way to contribute. You know what I mean? Like, they'll hand you a shovel, they'll hand you a broom, they'll give you
a natty bow.
Right. They'll give you a volunteer opportunity with a nonprofit. They'll offer you a job. And you know, it's a place where people are inclusive, want to bring people together, want to do things
You've
together.
You've never wanted to leave?
I mean, I lived in D.C. for a while, which was you know.
Too far from the Orioles, probably, for you, right?
but you know, DC had a lot of free things you could do, right? The Smithsonian, all these things are free, and there's so much free stuff.
How long did you live there?
About 7 or 8 years.
Oh, so more than temporary.
Oh yeah, okay. I was a bike messenger in DC. I had a bike messenger business, in the late '90s, early 2000s,
right.
Before I became a full time journalist. I didn't actually become a full time journalist until I was like 40 years old. So
wow, I became one at 15.
There you go.
They threw me out at 54, the NFL at least, and the Ravens. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of that, you know, kind of, I think, informs my work and my experience is that I didn't go right from college into this. Like, I did a lot of, like, kind of, like, real-world things, and I don't take
and this is more fun.
Well, right. Well, it is because you get to do, you know.
If you got to go over and help the shots.
You get to hang out with Barb Mikulski and John Water. But yeah, I did get this. You mentioned Jim Palmer earlier. Like, I did get to spend, when Jim Palmer threw out the first pitch on his 50th anniversary with the Orioles, I spent the entire day with Jim Palmer. Like,
I have spent plenty of time with Jim Palmer.
In the booth with him and on the field.
My love of Jim Palmer, my respect of Jim Palmer, maybe you don't know this. I mean, I didn't know you back in this era, but in 2009, when Brian Billick bought part of the company, we moved to WNST.net, we did a Trailblazers thing. We did a thing called King of Baltimore Sports, and this was dreamed up by Drew, and we pitted in March Madness format, Wes Unseld and, you know, Gary Williams and, like, all of that.
Right.
Like, and Baltimore, it was a Baltimore thing. Michael Phelps, you know, whatever, right? For me, Jim Palmer, no offense to Brooks, no offense to Cal Ripken, no offense to Johnny U, look up Jim Palmer's accomplishments on the Hill. Look at what he did and what no one else has ever done. And No offense to Brooks, no offense to Cal. Maybe Michael Phelps would have a beef, I guess, if you're like there for if you want to enter that. But team sports, give me Palmer. Palmer is the greatest Oriole ever. I'll just say that.
I agree with you that he's the greatest baseball player on the field for the Orioles ever, and he was on the field for all three World Series. And his broadcasting career distinguishes him. His tenure with the
Orioles. We don't appreciate him as much as we should because he's been in our living room for the last 50 years.
And that's true. 1966, he's 19 years old, beating Sandy Koufax in the World Series.
I love Palmer, you know, but Palmer is Team Angelos, right? So that's one of the things this Angelos thing did to me in 06. It makes it, and the Angelos brothers are doing that now, right? Like, what team are you on? You are my team or their team, and Jim's on their team, not my team. So therefore, Jim has never. I think if Jim came over here, he'd say hello, but he would never sit down and do radio with me.
Well, I will say this: Brooks Robinson, in Baltimoreans' hearts, and in baseball lore, He's Mr. Oriole. I think he's a Joe DiMaggio type, Lou Gehrig type figure. Brooks Robinson. Norman Rockwell painted his portrait.
And I was there to get it that day.
It's hard.
I was there on Thanks Brooks Day. My dad was pissed because the Colts were playing the Patriots. You can look it up.
Yeah.
But the Colts were playing up in New England. My dad had the little radio with the little white thing in the one ear. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, there's people still name their daughters and sons after Brooks Robinson. And
Mulder's grandkid.
And their pets. I mean, the thing about, I'll just go back to Trailblazers thing for a minute, that Brooks, one reason why I consider him a trailblazer. He has this kind of radical civility, this southern graciousness.
He can't
that's
not
so
be
authentic.
Nice. Right.
But he also has this fire in his belly as a competitor, obviously, because first inning against Don Drysdale in 1966 World Series, he takes Drysdale, who was incredibly tough on right-hand hitters, takes him deep.
And knows he's getting chin music.
Right. In 1970, wins the MVP against the Big Red Machine. So, and you can go on YouTube and watch all those clips. So he has this tremendous competitive fire. And I think people credited Frank Robinson with bringing that to the Orioles. But Brooks Robinson had it, and they were co-leaders. And the combination's really interesting with Brooks.
I know more about baseball than I probably know about anything in the whole world.
Brooks, like, after meeting all these people.
I love baseball.
Who everybody is like, they know each other. But Brooks, even among these other people, up on a bit of a pedestal because, you know, he was an icon probably before everybody else a little bit in Baltimore. And the heights.
You might say he was Baltimore's first icon along with Johnny U. They were the first icons.
Right.
I remember when I was a boy, because you didn't grow up here, so I'll tell you this. I'll give you a little history. Maybe you love this. You'll go source this, okay?
I was a Mets fan in 1969.
Now, hold on. You're going to source this. We would take the 22 bus out of Highland Town, free plug for G&A Coney Island Hot Dog, which is where I had my last crab cake with Andy up at G&A in White Marsh now. So we're in Highland Town, take the bus. The bus would go past Catholic High, past the White Coffee Pot Jr. over the hill, down Blair Edison, right? And then you would go up across Bel Air Road where Herring Run is, right? And before you would make the left into the park to go to the golf course, right? There were fire hydrants when I was a boy. One was Johnny U, and one was Brooks Robinson. Somebody will remember that from that neighborhood. Maybe Keith Melchior, maybe Eddie Lauer will remember that, because Eddie grew up right around the corner from there by La Fontainebleau and La Fontaine Rouge. Which were the French part of Bel Air Edison neighborhood over there. By Little Flower. There's a Little Flower, so they were French over there. But that's how Baltimore, there was Johnny U, and there was Brooks. Now, we've had other heroes, right? I mean, Ray Lewis has a statue, right? Like Cal Ripken, obviously it's Cal Ripken. We have statues for Earl Weaver and Frank and all those people.
Right.
But Brooks and Johnny.
So one thing we know that's different is they spent their entire lives here. They weren't from here, like me.
Menken wasn't idolized.
But Brooks Robinson.
Poe wasn't idolized. These were idolized.
But Brooks Robinson and Johnny
Nice, right?
Also lived their off seasons here. And I didn't know Johnny Nice. I didn't get to know Artie Donovan. And Artie Donovan would ask as many questions of you as you were asking about
always.
Him. He wanted
where are you from?
And I've talked to people who worked for Johnny Nice, like at his restaurant, and said, just raved about him as a man, as an employer, as a boss, like in a way that only somebody who's working for somebody else.
Right? Pennsylvania, you worked with his hands, Johnny. You did, right?
Yeah, and then the players, the way they talked him, the down to earth guy. I think that's really remarkable. And I'll say one other thing about Brooks Robinson. He's from Little Rock, Arkansas. His brother was friends with Jerry Jones, and people were asking Brooks Robinson, well, you're going to have to come and play with, like, black fellas up there. How are you going to handle that? And Brooks is, listen, I've got my own things to worry about when I'm playing ball. I'm not concerning myself, right? They're not some problem. And I think that in 1966, when Frank Robinson comes here, he and his family can't find a home to buy. And that's how segregated still Baltimore is. And so Brooks welcome into the fold with open arms, putting his arms around, become known as the Brooks as the Robinson brothers. I think really set a tremendous example for Baltimore, for the country as well, in the mid '60s, which is kind of remarkable. One reason we consider Brooks Robinson a trailblazer, it's not just that he was the greatest, the human vacuum cleaner at third base.
He's a great human. Great human, Brooks Robinson.
A great human.
No one would ever dispute that, his 80-plus years on Earth. Ron Cassie's here of Baltimore Magazine. I would hold the cards up in the magazine up. Trailblazers. Also wrote about CFG Bank Radio. So I'm going full circle here with you, Ron, because we're talking baseball. Brooks Robinson, I had a cousin on that team, too. So all my cousin wanted to do was bring his family here. Here I am. John Angelos, all these years later, I was thrown out. People say to me now, as a journalist, yeah, the Orioles and the Ravens done throwing you out. Something must be wrong with you. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, I ask questions. You know what I mean? Like, that's all I've ever done is ask questions. I thought the John Angelos tirade with Dan Connolly was the perfect indicative example for all of my career, for anyone that would say to me, why can't you get along with those people? This is who they are. This is what they embody. This is the spirit of Steve Bisciotti now at this point, who goes running off to the breakers and picks and chooses which media members are media members and who gets thrown out after 30 years. This is different than Brooks is in my neighborhood and they get off-season jobs and they're a part of the community. I sat here and bled my heart, 91, 92, 93, 94, 95, trying to get a football team. We have to invest in this. We have to give taxpayer money. We have to build a stadium. We'll get concerts. We'll get Super Bowls. We'll get Final Four. We'll get to the CFG Bank and that investment. But the Angelos thing, the John Angelos thing to me, it's just unbelievable. Like, hiding behind Martin Luther King, deflecting, being abrasive, being arrogant, being dismissive, talking down to Dan. All of that happened in a 4-minute piece to say, oh, now I get why Nestor was thrown out in those. Now I understand what anyone would be up against trying to get truth out of these people, trying to get accountability out of these people, trying to just get them to speak directly and clearly about strategy, truth, even to the point where in that 4 minutes, what was the big lie, Donald Trump, the big lie and all that, the big lie, he's going to invite you and me down to see his books, right? Like, he's now on tape saying that. Like, and it's not going to matter. It's not going to matter to anybody. But it was, nobody cares anymore about the Orioles. I've learned that. I've written Peter Principles. I'm going to re-release that. No one cares. But it's just such a shame. It's just such a shame. That's all. I mean, for me, at this age, I don't pine away about my reporter's pass or being at the games or having hot dogs. Luke goes down or whatever. It's just a shame that it can't be better. I just wish it could be better than this.
Yeah, I think most people, lifelong baseball fans like myself, you don't want to think about the ownership and the business side of it, really. You want to just go and have the experience and enjoy the team. And Baltimore over the years has had, wonderful players that we love to watch, good guys off the field.
You also want to believe they're trying to win and they know how to win. You want to feel some level of competence, right, to give you confidence, right?
Right. And about the press conference, Dan Connolly, first of all, the reporter, was asking just basic questions, civil, professional. His patience and poise in that situation is remarkable. You know,
I'm a professional.
John Angelos
good
came
job,
across
man.
As, I think, smug, disingenuous, hiding behind you know the son of a billionaire, right? Hiding behind Martin Luther King's
hiding
birthday.
Behind the mayor.
And let's face it, like the Orioles and Camden Yards get tremendous public tax dollars. I mean, the Camden Yards are getting a whole NM&T Bank are getting a whole new bond issued, right? $200 or $300 million. You know, reinvested of public taxpayer money.
$600 million.
The combined, right. I think like yeah. M&T, right? And so, and not to answer a basic question from a journalist who, in a sense, is representing the citizens of not just Baltimore, in this case, of Maryland, right? That's the journalist is our go-between to these people, right? We want them to ask these questions. John
when
Angelos,
they mistreat us, they're mistreating you.
100%.
Like they really are.
And especially with the professionals, and Dan Connolly is a great sports journalist. And, you know, I think John Angelos has made himself publicly available to the media like twice in 4 years prior to this and to just shut everything down. And, yes, as a baseball fan, too, like we have this great young talent now assembled coming up. And we want to know, you know, are the Orioles going to invest in some – and some veteran players maybe.
Are you a season ticket holder?
I'm not, no.
You're not. Okay. No. I don't know your finances, your situation, where you are, whatever. But it feels to me like in the offseason, they've sort of given up on that. They've sort of given up on a reason to buy in that even a guy like you that might, if the price were right and the bennies were right and I had $5 beers on Tuesday nights and I could... You know, plan to make it something that I would say I'm going April 18th to see the White Sox. I'm going. I miss that, and I don't live two blocks away anymore. I lived two blocks away for 20 years, right?
Yeah.
So like, I had it available anytime. If somebody had extra tickets, they might offer them to me or whatever. I rarely went. I rarely go. Now it is really. Now I'm out on the farm. Now I'm like, got to get in the car, go down, park, do all of that. It's just so poorly run from that side of the business side of how they do their marketing. And look, the Ravens have their own issues with empty seats and trying to resell me my PSLs that I gave them back a couple of years ago. But the baseball conundrum to me is it doesn't feel like they try hard. You know what I mean? It doesn't feel – it feels like I'm outworking them, and it shouldn't be that way. They're getting a lot of money. You know what I mean? Literally.
And it can feel that way. And you know, last year was such a surprise, and you see people – returning to the ballpark, I think fans were hoping there'd be some type of investment in that, right, in the community. The value of franchises have gone up, exponentially since Peter Angelos bought the team.
Of course.
And we would like to know that the money's being invested. I still am walking distance, bike ride distance to the ballpark, and like you, sometimes just spur of the moment somebody calls you. Sometimes it's like soccer jersey giveaway.
Listen,
down.
It's back to me where it was when I was a kid. And this is God's honest truth. If there's a pitcher I want to see, if there's a player I want to see, the only time I have circled the calendar the last 2 years has been Ohtani, and I haven't made it yet. This was 100 degrees. I almost went with who's the guy who ran for governor that I didn't vote for? Obama's guy. That's how unimpressed I was with him. I don't remember his name. We did not go. He's a baseball fan of Hispanic descent.
Tom Perez.
Thank you. We were going to go. It was 100 degrees that night.
Yeah.
And the Orioles were 50 and 94 at the time. Or, you know, it was bad. It was pre-plague too, right? So
yeah.
I would just say this. For me, getting to a game is pitching matchup. For some people, it's giveaway, right? For some people, it's $5 ticket. For some people, it's, it's girls' night, it's boys' night, it's safety night, it's pride night, it's UMBC night, it's whatever, it's Hawaiian summer night, it's Christmas in July, it's Star Wars, May the 4th
when
night.
The team
right?
is
I mean,
competitive.
They do
when
all
they,
of these
when
things.
They do what's necessary to be, we'll just say, competitive, right? Like competitive for a wild card spot. Right, that changes things if you're a sportsman. Then you want to read the box score every morning or every night, right? Then you're following the games on TV and you're going when there's a good matchup.
But they got people back into the soap opera last year. They really did.
That's why.
And then the soap opera ended, and then the off season began, and the Ravens have had their own freaking soap opera, right?
Yeah.
And we're 2 weeks out on spring training, and I want to feel them a little bit more. I want to feel Gunnar Henderson. I want to feel Adley Rutschman. That's all. Don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I think the caravan is coming up soon that they do before they go to spring.
Next weekend.
Yeah. So maybe that'll generate some.
Is that like the bookmobile, the caravan? Ron Cassie's here, Baltimore Magazine. I have not talked to you about the arena. Can we go back and do that? Because Marty Bass is here, and I want to give him a hug. He's got his Alabama mug. He's been working. I'm not going to make Marty work on this. No. He's over at Bill's Music House holding up big heads, fans everywhere. Why don't they call it catch and bait? I'll ask Marty that off air. I am Nestor. We are WNST. We are doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. It's all brought to you by our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free. 0% financing for 5 years, but you got to get on that right now. And our friends at the Maryland Lottery, I'm going to give Marty a holiday cash drop, a ticket for him. And I'm going to give Ron a Raven scratch off. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on the 3rd of March at Drug City in Dundalk. We're also, yes, they have a crab cake and it's delicious. And they have the fountain down there. And Marty's been there, I know. They made a big deal. They said, yeah, you're coming in Friday, but Marty's coming in next week. And I'm like, but Marty, don't feel bad. They're like, but really the big one's when Mike Rowe's here. So, you know, we all have levels of our gratitude and fun that we have here. And we're also going to be on the 8th at Fadley. So, hey, Ron's going to stay with us. And for both of you, I'm just going to leave this segment. I've been collecting Pacifica belt buckles. Do you know about these? Have I shown you these before?
No.
So I'm going to stand up. Here's one of the new little tricks on the show. This is my belt buckle today. I wore this for you, Ron, today because I knew you'd be going to see the Eagles at Hotel California. So I have my Eagles belt buckle today, my Pacifica belt buckle. I'm going to give Marty a hug. I'm going to recaffeinate Ron Cassie. We're going to come back. My dude, Jeff Brandis, is going to be here talking about athletes and the athlete mindset and coaching and going to try to toughen me up a little bit. For Super Bowl week, all right?
That's good for Super Bowl week. Yeah.
I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We're at State Fair in Catonsville. Life is great in the 21228. Stay with us on WNST.